Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Era McCauley, and it provides an update on the future of the Extendicare site at 315 Queen Mary Road.
Hello, I'm Era McCauley, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today on YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach out to our news team at news@cfrc.ca. City Council approved a bylaw to authorize an agreement for the provision of a municipal capital facility at 315 Queen Mary Road in Kingston, Ontario, at May 19th's council meeting. Deputy Mayor Boehm put forward report number 48, received from the Chief Administrative Officer.
With that being said, Chief Administrative Officer reports and recommends as follows. Item 1, 315 Queen Mary Road, Municipal Capital Facility Agreement.
The report passed with minimal discussion outside of a clarifying question from Councillor Amos.
Any discussion? Councillor Amos.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, through you. Just a quick question for staff. Under financial considerations, it indicates that it was built into the sponsorship cities departments for the fiscal year. Is that in relation to this fiscal year, or are we tapping into the departments and this was not planned for this fiscal year? Just a question of curiosity.
Commissioner Campbell.
Thank you, and through you. It has been included in the operating and projected operating budgets of the City of Kingston, so it has been included. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we will call the vote on item 1, 315 Queen Mary Road, Municipal Capital Facility Agreement.
The report was passed unanimously. The former Extendicare building at 315 Queen Mary Road was purchased by the city in 2024 and undertook three community organized and one city-led public meeting to receive feedback on proposed uses for the site. Originally designated as 309 Queen Mary Road, city staff worked with community agencies, health teams, and housing operators to develop an operations model for the site that advances Council's 2023 to 2026 strategic priorities, including investing in affordable and supportive housing, increasing access to healthcare professionals and services, and fostering a caring and inclusive community. The building is now in the final stages of being renovated for community purposes, which include a space for a medical clinic operated by Kingston Community Health Centers, KCHC, and a transitional supportive housing program to be operated by Home-Based Housing, HBH. KCHC and HBH will lease separate portions of the building, and occupancy for both uses is anticipated in the short term. With the bylaw, staff were seeking approval of a municipal capital facility agreement with Kingston Community Health Centers and Home-Based Housing to ensure the long-term financial viability of the health clinic and the transitional supportive housing program. Although the city had originally eyed an earlier move-in date, renovations revealed significant mold problems, which had to be addressed. In the original 2024 report, the Queen Mary Road project is described as a shared care model aiming to promote wellness and social inclusion, to support the individual needs of transitional housing residents alongside the primary health needs of community members, and to offer community use and programming space. The transitional housing program operated by Home-Based Housing will support up to 35 individuals who are 55 plus years old. Operating 24/7, the transitional housing program will include on-site staff support and focus on goal-based case management that assesses client needs and includes referrals to partner agencies in the community to support long-term housing security. Once renovations are completed at the site, the premises will also house the Midtown Kingston Kingston Health Home, operated by Kingston Community Health Centers, which is currently operating out of their temporary location at 791 Princess Street. The anticipated move-in date is July 2026. Lionhearts Inc. are also partners in the project, overseeing the operations of community use spaces on the premises as part of a vocational training program. Council's approval entering into a lease with KCHC for 315 Queen Mary Road includes municipal capital facility provisions, which exempts the premise from taxation for municipal and education purposes, effective upon the execution of the lease. In the analysis presented to Council, the report noted that an exemption from paying municipal property taxes will relieve KCHC and HBH from additional property tax charges for their period of occupancy, as well as reduce the city's associated funding requirements, which shall assist with the long-term sustainability of the important services provided to the community. The total value of the property tax exemption has not been assessed. The city purchased the property for $3.65 million, investing an additional $9.4 million in the site's renovation and conversion, bringing the total project budget close to $13.1 million. The primary care portion of this includes a loan that will be recovered over a 25-year repayment term with the clinic, while the total city capital costs, including property acquisition, has been funded from already approved affordable housing budget of $6.5 million and affordable housing reserve funds. This project did not involve the city issuing new debt, and operating financial impacts on the city are expected to be minimal and will be covered through the operating budget of the city.
Thank you, Era. Now over to Dinah Jansen with a story by Michelle Dory Forrestel, the LJI reporter for The Kingstonist, about the creation of a new battery storage facility in Greater Napanee.
Thank you, Jesse. Ontario Minister of Energy and Mines Stephen Lecce traveled to Greater Napanee on Tuesday, May 19th to celebrate the completion and commercial launch of one of Canada's largest battery energy storage facilities. Standing at the newly operational Napanee Battery Energy Storage System, or BESS, Lecce framed the project as part of Ontario's broader push to expand electricity generation and storage capacity, amid forecasts that provincial electricity demand could rise by as much as 90% by 2050. The Napanee BESS project, a joint venture between Atura Power and Amerisco Canada, was selected through the Independent Electricity System Operators Expedited Long-Term 1 Competitive Procurement Process launched in 2022. The facility sits beside the Lennox Generating Station on Ontario Power Generation-owned land along the Lake Ontario shoreline in Greater Napanee. According to the province, the $600 million facility can power approximately 250,000 homes for up to 4 hours during peak demand, making it one of the largest operating battery storage projects in Canada. The sites include 284 battery storage units, transformer stations, transmission connection infrastructure, and supporting systems designed to store electricity generated during periods of low demand, particularly from Ontario's nuclear fleet, and return it to the grid when demand rises. Lecce repeatedly emphasized that the project was completed approximately 5 weeks ahead of schedule while remaining on budget, presenting it as a model for Ontario's future energy build-out. Throughout the event, provincial officials tied the project to broader themes of economic resilience, energy independence, and made-in-Canada infrastructure investment amidst ongoing economic uncertainty and trade tensions with the United States. The province noted the project used Ontario-based suppliers, including 72 medium-voltage transformers manufactured in London, Ontario, and purchased through an Indigenous-owned business operating in Nipissing First Nation. Local officials and business leaders also framed the project as a major economic development tool for Greater Napanee and Eastern Ontario. Greater Napanee Mayor Terry Richardson said reliable energy infrastructure is becoming increasingly important as the municipality continues attracting industrial and residential growth. Rick Brzee, member of Provincial Parliament for Hastings, Lennox, and Addington, described the project as critical to ensuring a stable electricity supply while positioning Eastern Ontario for continued industrial and economic growth. The province said development and construction of the project supported approximately 120 jobs in engineering, skilled trades, transportation, and manufacturing, while the completed facility will support several ongoing operational positions. When asked what the province-wide standards or funding supports exist for municipalities hosting battery storage facilities in the event of a major lithium-ion battery fire or other emergency, Lecce defended the project's safety measures but did not directly answer who would ultimately bear operational responsibility in a serious emergency. Lecce then broadened the discussion to energy storage technologies more generally, saying the province is agnostic about which systems are used so long as they remain affordable, safe, and reliable. When pressed further on who specifically would be responsible during a major incident and whether municipalities receive additional provincial support for emergency response capacity, Lecce again emphasized training, protocols, and community engagement, but stopped short of outlining a clear chain of responsibility. Etura President and Chief Executive Officer Tom Patterson added that the company has worked closely with local emergency responders and that the facility includes on-site fire suppression systems alongside what the company described as best-in-class technology designed to reduce fire risk. Tuesday's exchange highlighted an issue that has surfaced repeatedly in public discussions surrounding battery storage projects in Greater Napanee and elsewhere. While governments and developers increasingly describe battery storage as essential infrastructure for Ontario's energy future, questions remain about municipal emergency preparedness, long-term liability, and who ultimately carries responsibility if a major incident were to occur. Concerns about emergency response and environmental risks surrounding lithium-ion battery storage systems have increasingly surfaced internationally as large-scale battery projects expand. A recent review published through the National Fire Protection Association, a major fire safety standards organization whose codes are widely used across North America, noted ongoing gaps in understanding the full environmental and public health impacts of large battery fires, particularly regarding air quality, water contamination, and toxic metal emissions. Last Tuesday's announcement concerned the completion of the existing Napanee BSS project, approved under Ontario's earlier procurement stream. The province separately confirmed that results from the next phase of Ontario's long-term electricity procurement process, the LT2 capacity stream, which could include additional storage projects, are expected later this summer.
Thank you, Dinah, and thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell of The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up, we have a story by Brenda Little, the LJI reporter from CJPE County Radio, about Prince Edward County's connection to the legendary Avro Arrow military plane.
Prince Edward County played a significant role in the development of the Avro Arrow. In the early 1950s, models designed by Canadian engineers were launched 6,000 meters into the air and 14 kilometers over Lake Ontario from Point Peter at the south end of the county. The models were equipped with instruments capable of transmitting data back to shore. Those models guided the engineers as they designed and built the delta-winged aircraft capable of flying at twice the speed of sound with the intention of intercepting Cold War Soviet bombers. The project was abruptly cancelled and the controversy around that decision is still studied today. Jeff Young is a retired engineer and model maker who shares his passion for the history of the Arrow at the Marinews Museum in South Bay, Prince Edward County. He gave a detailed presentation to a room full of airplane aficionados about the Arrow and its connection to the county. Jeff tells us more. Jeff, you come from a railroad background. How did you become interested in the Avro Arrow?
Well, born and raised in Trenton, my dad and mom have both served in the Air Force. My dad was very good at instilling me an interest in planes. Something to do was go. Dad would always go, lots of Lancaster flying over. You're not going to see many more of those. So he, very passionate, he was a model builder himself of aircraft. He instilled that and I knew of the Avro Arrow very early in my life, but there was always a passion. It's never just trains, but planes, and I'm also interested in ships and shipbuilding and that. So the transportation thing. So but the Avro Arrow, in studying aeronautics in university, we knew of the story of the Avro Arrow. Just grows on you, and there has been things like the CBC movie about the Avro, and like I said, books. There are, got dozens and dozens of books on the Avro Arrow, but it's just such a Canadian story, but a sad story.
It is a sad story, yeah. You seem to have such a passion for it. It's not just giving out facts. You absolutely love this. It looks like you do anyway.
Yeah, it's, I would say my retirement project after government, and you got lots of time. I wrote a book about one of the railways I built models off of in Huntsville. It's not county, but it was a retirement project that you start building models and you find information as part of the research and it fires your passion. But, this was, I'll build this model and then finding information of what people were doing down there and having people come in and tell me, oh, we remember what was going on down there. It's just, adds to the story,
And
it fires the passion.
Yes. And there would be people still around that would remember all of that.
Yeah,
it's quite something. It's like I was telling you before, in Hamilton, I remember hearing, the supersonic boom.
Can you tell me a little bit about the trail, the
Avro
Arrow Trail?
The Avro Arrow Trail was put together primarily by the county museums, but it's you go to one museum, and you come down to the county and travel along. This gives you incentive to visit other places and with a theme, and the theme was the Avro Arrow.
There are several sites.
Yeah, the National Air Force Museum in Trenton is part of it. The Hastings and Prince Edward Regiment is also the second site. Third site is Base 31, the hangar in which they have the Avro Lancaster is there. Down at Point Peter, there's will be a marker, hopefully someday, and to commemorate what the important work that was down there. And of course, our site, the Mariners Memorial Park and the Avro Arrow Gallery, which has all the story panels of the Avro Arrow and artifacts and the velvet glove history that they found out in the lake. And some of the equipment and so forth when the Raise the Arrow team went up to look for these models, 2017 to 2020.
Yeah, I remember that. We came in 2013. I remember them doing it and I'm going like, what? Avro Arrow stuff down out in Point
Peter?
That
was a lot of the time a lot of people heard about it and the money.
Yeah.
And it was also in the Arrow, they're called Arrowheads because they're so passionate about the Avro Arrow and build models and the books, and that is a large group. In fact, there is a 2/3 size, hopefully someday flying replica of the Avro Arrow being built out in Western Canada. And there are bits and pieces of people who are trying to restore one of the Orenda Iroquois engines. I think it's in Calgary, I'm not sure.
Still lots of people with passion for it.
You seem very interested in history. How did that happen?
Oh, I guess I always had an interest in trains and anything old, and moving back here to the county. It's just the history and telling stories and finding out things that people didn't know about or forgot about. It drives me to get involved in history.
And do you have anything else to add?
No, other than hopefully come visit us, the county museums, come down to Mariners Park Museum and visit. We're open Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and I'm there most Friday afternoons interpreting the Avro Arrow. Glad to see you.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Coming up, Genevieve Hinch is reading a story by Keith Dempsey, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, about the passing of veteran Sealy's Bay firefighter James Gardner.
Thank you, Dinah. Flags at facilities across the township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands are flying at half-mast in memory of longtime volunteer firefighter James Wallace Gardner, who died May 15th at the age of 82. Gardner dedicated 50 years of service to the Sealy Bay's Fire Department, later known as the Leeds and the Thousand Island Fire Service. Township officials say Gardner's connection to the fire service began as a teenager, when he would leave the family farm and run to the station whenever he heard emergency sirens sounding at the community. At age 21, he officially joined the department and went on to serve for 4 decades as an active firefighter, including several years as deputy chief. Even after stepping away from the frontline firefighting duties, Gardner continued supporting the department for another 5 years as an auxiliary member, operating trucks and pumps. Beyond firefighting, Gardner also served as the community as volunteer driver from 1967 to 74, and later volunteered with the Canadian Cancer Society, driving residents to appointments after slowing down work on the family farm. According to his obituary, Gardner was well known in Sealy's Bay community for his love of hockey, baseball, and hunting, fishing, as well as his storytelling and dedication to helping others. Township Council and staff extended condolences to Gardner's family while recognizing his decades of volunteer service and lasting impact on the community. Officials say Gardner's lifelong commitment to public service and community involvement leaves behind a legacy that will be remembered throughout the region.
And thank you to Genevieve Hinch and Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with the Kingston Sports Report, brought to you by CFRC Power Plays.
Thank you, Dinah. Kingston's Slush Puppy Place will play host to the 2026 OHL Priority Selection Draft on June 12th and 13th. The 2026 draft will be the first in 26 years to take place in person, as it is usually a remote, online-only affair. The Oshawa Generals hold the number one overall pick, and it is expected that they will select 16-year-old forward Tanner Adams out of Hill Academy. Adams, who has outstanding physical measurables for his age, standing at 6 feet and 1 inches tall and weighing just a shade under 200 pounds, is fresh off an 88-point season in the North American Prep Hockey League. He tallied 34 goals and 54 assists in 54 games. Adrian Groh is the draft's top-rated defenseman who played for the Vaughan Kings in the Greater Toronto Hockey League. Forward Lachlan Whalen, who plays for the Quinte Red Devils, is the closest thing Kingston has to a local product in this draft, and he is projected to be a late first-round or early second-round pick. Speaking of Kingston, the Frontenacs hold the 11th overall pick and will have a number of solid options to choose from. The OHL Priority Selection Draft begins at 9 a.m. on Friday, June 12th, and concludes on Saturday, June 13th. Tickets are available for purchase through Ticketmaster. In local football news, we saw home opener action for the four Kingston Grenadier programs over the weekend, starting with the U-12 Grenadiers, who tallied the first win in program history with a dominant 44-0 victory over the North Toronto Sentinels. The U-16 Grenadiers kept that winning feeling alive, prevailing 19-12 over the U-16 Peel Panthers. The U-14 Grenadiers would lose an absolute thriller, 40-35, to the Peel Panthers. And it was the U-18 Grens who sent the fans home happy, winning 44-0 over the Cornwall Wildcats. So we had 44-0 to start the day and 44-0 to end the day. All of that adds up to a very successful weekend at Richardson Stadium for the Kingston Grenadiers.
And thanks again to Jesse Bell for that update. And also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn about Kim and local listings for your home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Tuesday, May 26th, daytime high of 19 degrees with a 60% chance of precipitation in the afternoon, dropping down to 14 overnight. Wednesday, May 27th, we have got a daytime high of 20 degrees, but in the sun, it's going to be much warmer, or at least feel that way, closer to 26 degrees with a little bit of humidity, 55% chance of precipitation throughout the day, but not getting a whole lot of accumulation. Thursday, May 28th, daytime high of 19 degrees, a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston, dropping down to 10 overnight. Friday, May 29th, 16 is your high, but feeling closer to 20 in the sunshine, dropping down to a fairly chilly 8 degrees overnight. Saturday, May 30th, daytime high of 17, feeling closer to 19 with a 58% chance of showers. Sunday, May 31st, ending off the month with a beautiful sunny 18 degree day, perfect conditions leading us into Monday, June 1st. We get another 18 degree day with lots of sunshine, feeling closer to 22 when all is said and done. That concludes your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Let's send it back over to Genevieve Hinch for CFRC's concert and events calendar.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar. Whether you're looking for live music, local markets, workshops, comedy, or just something fun to do around the city, there's plenty happening in Kingston this week. Let's get into it. Starting off on Wednesday, Spring Reverb officially kicks into gear with Canada's Music Incubator hosting a financial literacy for artists session at the Broom Factory from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you're looking for something social later in the evening, Something in the Water Brewing Company and the Royal Canadian Legion are both hosting board game nights. while Daft Brewing and La Vida Bistro host trivia and euchre. For something a little different, the Gananoque Pride Alliance is screening Legally Blonde at the 1000 Islands Drive-In starting at 6:30 p.m. Thursday keeps things busy with Kingston Public Market running all day in Springer Market Square from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Later on, Science Quest Animal Engineers takes place at the Calvin Park Branch Library, while Daft Brewing hosts a burlesque show from 8 to 10 p.m. Spring Reverb concerts also begin Thursday night with Slaves of Spanky, Pony Girl, and Almond Milk performing at the Broom Factory. Other live music highlights include Real Love, a Kenny and Dolly tribute at the Kingston Grand Theater, and Divine Right alongside Casper Skulls taking over the toucan later that night. Now, Friday is definitely packed with events all across the city. The Nature of Being exhibition opens at the Tech Gallery from 3 to 8 p.m., while downtown venues are filled with Spring Reverb performances throughout the night. The Broom Factory hosts their Dirty Nil alongside Cam Cannon and Futura Free beginning at 7:30. Forever Seeger takes over the Kingston Grand Theater, while Something in the Water Brewing Company hosts a charity drag bingo night starting at 8 p.m. Other live music includes the Sadies at Hayloft Dance Hall, Mauricio and the Latin Beat Band at the Sphere, and Hot Garbage with Ace of Wands rocking the toucan late into the night. Heading into Saturday, Turtle Awareness Day takes over Lake Ontario Park from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., while the Spring Reverb Punk Rock Fleet Market runs at the Broom Factory from 11 to 3. There's also a free community event called Spring Together happening at Kingston Community Health Centers from noon until 3. Live music highlights include the Frontenac Community Concert Band celebrating its 50th anniversary at Kingston Gospel Temple, Thania Iyer and Julia Finnegan performing at the Broom Factory, and Golden Feather taking over the toucan later that night. If you're looking for a fun evening out, line dancing returns to the Buckle from 7 to 8 p.m. Wrapping things up, Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs until 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., while the Cataraqui Indigenous Market takes place at Confederation Park from 10 to 4. Spring Reverb continues with the recording studio tour at a mystery location with a DIY merch workshop hosted by M. Harmson at the Warehouse. Live music includes Bedouin Soundclash performing at the Broom Factory at 2:30, Eric Urin and Megan Belong returning to the Cove Inn, and live band karaoke at the Merchant Tap House starting at 9 p.m. That's your weekly events and concerts calendar for May 25th through the 31st. For more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.